Hack the Entrepreneur is part of Rainmaker FM, the digital business podcast network. Find more great shows and education at rainmaker.fm. Today's episode of Hack the Entrepreneur is brought to you by EarthClass Mail. EarthClass Mail moves your snail mail to the cloud, giving you instant access 24/7 and integrates with the tools and services you use every day. You also get a real professional address to share publicly with customers, business partners, and investors. From what I've seen, EarthClass Mail looks like a pretty brilliant solution that's perfect for businesses and independent entrepreneurs of all types. Visit earthclassmail.com/hack and you'll get your first month of service absolutely free when you sign up. That's earthclassmail.com/hack.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. Today is special. My book comes out today. Amazon.com, you can find it, Hack the Entrepreneur, or htebook.com. Will take you to the page, but it's on Amazon. I worked really hard on it and you should get it. It's like $2 or something, $3. I don't know, something. Come on. I worked my butt off on it and I know that it'll do so much for you and you will love it. So please go check it out right now. But before you do that, let's get into the show. I'm your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is an author, professional speaker, branding expert, teacher at Duke University's Fuqua School of Business, and an entrepreneur. She consults and speaks for a diverse range of clients, including Google, the World Bank, Microsoft, Morgan Stanley, and many, many more. She's a frequent contributor to the Harvard Business Review, Time Magazine, Entrepreneur, and the World Economic Forum blog. She is also the author of Inc. Magazine's number one book of leadership in 2015. It's called Stand Out: How to Find Your Breakthrough Idea and Build a Following Around It. Now, let's hack Dori Clark. I want to take a moment to thank today's sponsor, Bushel. For some people, IT is a task and not a career. Bushel is a simple-to-use cloud-based tool that anyone can leverage to manage Apple devices in the workplace. Bushel allows you to easily set up and protect all the devices that you distribute to your team or those that your team already has, provide access to company email accounts, install work apps to devices individually or all at once, and separate and protect your team's personal data from company data. And if a device is ever lost or stolen, you can remotely lock it or wipe company data completely. Access all these features to easily manage your Apple devices wherever you want, wherever you are. Bushel makes the complex simple so you can focus on what matters most and take back your nights and weekends. Your first three devices are forever free. And each additional device is just $2 a month with no contracts and no commitments. Learn more at bushel.com/hack. That's bushel.com/hack. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have another very, very, very special guest. Dori, welcome to the show.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely my pleasure. This is going to be fun.
Yes, I am pumped for it.
Awesome. All right, let's jump straight into it. Dori, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
I think the biggest thing that has been contributing to my success is writing. And the reason for that is that there's just obviously a lot more people in the world that are consuming information rather than producing information. And it was only when I started putting my ideas out there and sharing them so that other people could see them and talk about them that I felt like I was able to get momentum behind my, you know, my brand, quote unquote. And people began to say, oh, you have something interesting to contribute. And it differentiated me from the mass of people who call themselves entrepreneurs or the mass of people who call themselves consultants. People need to see with their own eyes that you know what you're talking about. And that was a really good way to do it.
I love it. And Is this something you've always been doing now, like since you started this whole entrepreneurial journey, or is this something you sort of picked up? And also, where did you start writing?
So it was actually something that I came to somewhat reluctantly. I mean, not that I had a bias against writing per se, but really what I wanted to do was I wanted to write a book. And that was just a longstanding personal goal. I thought it would be good for my business, but it was just something that I wanted to do. And I discovered in 2009, which is when I got really serious about wanting to write a book and focused on it, I was hitting roadblocks and I was not able to get any publishers interested in my work because I was not famous enough. I did not have enough of a so-called platform. And so they didn't want to take a chance on publishing me because they thought that I wouldn't be able to sell enough copies. And as many entrepreneurs have learned, unfortunately, it is a fool's errand to rely on publishers to sell your book for you. You need to do it yourself. So you really need to build that following. And so because I could not publish a book, which is the thing that I wanted to do, I realized that in order to be able to get publishers interested, in order to be able to qualify to do it, I needed to build the platform. And so I turned to blogging in order to do it. So it was not something that I necessarily was immediately embracing for its own sake, but I knew it would help me get where I wanted to go. And so that's when I started blogging in earnest. And my first place that I broke in was the Huffington Post. From there, I was able to start writing for the Harvard Business Review. And from there, I started writing for Forbes. And over the course of about 3 to 4 years, I've published 500 plus articles. And it's in the course of doing that, just having a really large, consistent volume, that I think I was able to penetrate people's consciousness enough so that people began to have heard of me, and I was able to build up a bit of a following.
I love it. I love it. And this hits a personal note with me because I've only recently in the last, well, I'll say 6 months, started writing for Entrepreneur through this show. And so I get a weekly column there. And my first book, I just finished it like last week, I think.
Mazel tov!
Yeah. So it's obviously self-published, but it is coming out December 15th. That's I got to just put that plug in there just so everybody knows.
It is worth celebrating. That's a big thing.
It is. It is. And it's something that I've wanted to do for so long, but it's a hard thing to... It almost killed me. I'm going to just put that... But I actually did it in like 2.5 months, and it was hard. But we did it, and so that's it. So when you say you broke into the Huffington Post first, how did you, like, did you actively do that, or from blogging did sort of the opportunity appear? I know that's what people are wondering, right? Because so many people want to write on these big platforms. They blog all the time, but then how did you make that break into the first one?
Yeah, I definitely had to pursue it really aggressively. It's when you're able to break into like the fourth or fifth one, by that point, people start to come to you, but definitely not for the first one. So, you know, later on, after I was blogging for all these other papers, Entrepreneur actually came to me, and I'm writing for them now as well, which is great. And, you know, so that was fantastic that they reached out to me, and some other publications now have done so. But in the early days, no one knew who I was. And so they were not knocking on my door. For the Huffington Post, I was simultaneously trying to pursue connections at multiple publications. Basically, what I started with was just reaching out to my friends that already blogged for the publications and asking them either A, how they broke in, or B, you know, even better, would they be willing to make an introduction for me? And many, many people tried, but a lot of the times the editors there are busy, they're overwhelmed, they're impenetrable. Sometimes they're just jerks. So, you know, they won't get back to you, or they'll get back to you once, and then they'll never get back to you again. So it can be very frustrating. With the Huffington Post alone, I knew a lot of people who wrote for them. I knew like half a dozen people who wrote for them, but they all had these very weird answers, which I now only understand retrospectively. I almost didn't believe them at first because they're like, I don't know how to connect you. I'm like, how did you get connected? They're like, well, you know, basically aliens approved me. I'm like, what does that mean? But actually what happened was one out of these like six people actually knew a real live editor, and he connected me. And it was actually kind of amazing because once you had the right connection, I never even talked to the guy. I never even talked to the editor, but he read my stuff and he's like, okay. And so then just one day I got an email saying, here's your password. You can upload stuff now. And I thought that was so bizarre. But basically the net result is that I got the password. I could upload stories and that was great. And I was in. But because I had never talked to a live editor and I didn't know anyone there, I actually didn't have any way to connect people to the Huffington Post because it's all like these sort of, you know, robots. So I was, after that point, I wasn't able to really help people either. But so it was very strange and mysterious. But for most publications, there's actually a human editor that is the gatekeeper and, you know, you can get connected that way.
Yeah, but I think they're short on, I guess it's time, and so therefore patience, because you're right. They're very abrupt at the beginning, and it's like, whoa, but I have a brilliant editor now at Entrepreneur, but I've been sort of moved on to another one that I guess wasn't so swamped.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's some weird, like, to go back and try and explain to somebody how it worked, it's like, there was an introduction, there was months of ignoring, and then all of a sudden this random email shows up with, like, access to their CMS, and now I can just post stories once a week. And it's like, well, how did that happen? Like,
yeah.
I honestly don't know who approved that or what. So yeah, it's one of those hard things, but it's only based on, like you said, and with me was the same, is just doing the work ahead of time. I think somebody somewhere goes and checks out what you've written previously and they want to see that.
Yeah.
You can't just start writing on these platforms.
Exactly.
All right, Dory. So I believe you started your marketing strategy consulting business around 2006, 2009 is when you really got focused on writing a book. So let's go back, because there seems to be this time in every entrepreneur's life when they realize one of two things. Either they have this calling to make this huge difference in the world, or, as mostly seems to be the case, they just find that they simply cannot work for somebody else anymore. So Dory, could you tell me what side of the fence you fall on and when you've discovered this about yourself?
Yes, I probably should have discovered it sooner. For me, the turning point in my entrepreneurial journey where I decided to start my own business was actually the first time I had a real taste of autonomy. I was the executive director of a nonprofit, and it was a very small nonprofit, a small organization. And so I had complete control. I was running this operation day to day, you know, really tiny staff. And I realized that basically it was an entrepreneurial venture. I mean, that's, you know, it was a small business that, you know, needed to turn a profit. And even though the way that we were making our money was a little bit different, I mean, we had memberships and we had fundraisers and things like that. For all intents and purposes, it was running a small business. And I just thought, you know, I'm already doing this. I should do this for myself. And I realized it would actually be a lot less stressful because I had the weight of this whole organization on me. And I was constantly worried about how we were going to make enough money. I mean, you know, as with a lot of nonprofits, the board is kind of only marginally helpful in that area.
Yeah.
And I was constantly stressed out. And I thought, you know, I could do this better for myself. I could do this with less stress. I could do this with real freedom and autonomy. And so I thought, great, let's do it. I think a lot of people think of entrepreneurship as being risky. And ironically, it felt a lot less risky to me to do it that way.
Does it still always feel that way?
It feels...
Or does it get stressful sometimes?
You know, I think that if you're able to set things up so that you don't have to worry about money coming in, you know, if you can match your lifestyle to what you're doing, then I think it doesn't have to be stressful. Where it becomes stressful is if you say, oh my gosh, you know, I have this mortgage, I have these bills, and I don't really know where it's coming from because you don't have, you know, the quote unquote stable paycheck, which, I mean, in a lot of ways is illusory of a steady job because it could be taken away from you at any time. But with entrepreneurship, you know, that illusion is unmasked. And so it's really clear that, you know, cash flow is variable. So I think if you have a lot of expenses and a lot of big bills, then it can be stressful. But I have tried very deliberately to sculpt my lifestyle so that I know that no matter what, like the worst case scenario, I have a lot of savings and also I try to keep my expenses to a minimum. And so I don't really have to worry. I don't want to be in a position where I need money so badly that I'm forced to do things that I really don't want to do. So I moved to New York about a year and a half ago, And that's more difficult. I mean, it's very expensive here, obviously. And so your expenses are going to sort of shoot through the roof no matter what. But even so, I think that I live more modestly than probably I have to. But it's good for me psychologically because I know that I never need to really panic about business.
That's awesome. That's a good way to be. I think we make a lot better decisions when we're not making them based on immediate needs.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Things like we have to like make money this month kind of thing. That's when we start to not think strategically and long-term enough.
Yeah. I mean, clients sense desperation, and that's the worst thing. That's the thing that turns them off in a really huge way. As long as you're able to negotiate from a position of strength, even if you don't get the business now, it actually preserves and protects the relationship in the future. So I think that always being able to take the approach, you know, I don't need this gig, I don't need this business, is very powerful.
Yeah. And I know that people always worry about how do you get to that, but I think you answered that, which is it's not always that you have to make more money, especially when you're getting started and going. It's you could really cut back expenses. It's the same like net result. And it's
yeah.
easier to just not live lavishly and like buy all this new stuff and like always be consuming stuff when you can just cut those things back and then the income you do make lasts longer and then you don't have that.
Yeah, definitely. And in no way am I leading an abstemious life. I mean, for the first 8 years of having my business, I owned a condo just outside Boston. And, you know, it was really nice. It was, you know, really spacious 3-bedroom that I converted into a 2-bedroom. And it was every amenity that, you know, really that you'd want. But I tried to be strategic about it. I bought it in, you know, a so-called emerging neighborhood. So it was the kind of place that I just thought, all right, this is not where all the cool kids are living right now. But it is getting to be nicer and nicer. And it means that I am able to have a really good place, a really good lifestyle. And, you know, being at home is very comfortable. But, the neighborhood didn't have all the status that some people might crave. But it worked really well for me. And I was able to keep expenses down to the point that I never had to worry.
Nice. Emerging neighborhood. I like that. Excellent, Dory. Let's move on to work. Every blog post, every expert right now is talking 80-20. They say, do what you're good at, delegate the rest. Could you, Dory, tell me something that you are absolutely not good at in your business?
Yes, yes. And I think this is really important. The kind of necessary corollary to 80-20, which reading this book was very helpful to me in terms of framing it. But there's a book that I really like that came out a few years ago from actually my publisher, Harvard Business Review Press. It was called Uncommon Service by Francis Fry and Anne Morris. And technically, it was a book about, you know, service businesses and how to achieve really good customer service. And anyway, but they didn't actually make this connection explicitly, but I've found it really helpful in terms of thinking about my work life. And basically what they said is that if you are a service business that is wanting to really just like excel, to really just knock people's socks off, what you have to do is, and I love this phrase, you have to choose what to be bad at. Because essentially they say, look, no human being, no company can ever be perfect at everything. That's just not going to happen, right? And so most people take the path of not ever wanting to choose to be bad at something. And so they're kind of middling at everything. And that way they don't stand out. It's like, okay, well, you're kind of good at this and kind of good at that, but whatever. If you are really going to just wow people, you need to be great at a few things. And that means there are sacrifices. And so, for instance, you look at something like a bank. Well, there was one bank that they profiled, and the bank had these amazing customer-friendly hours. You know, they'd be open like really late, like 7 or 8 o'clock at night, so much nicer than regular banks. But the problem is, how do you pay for that? Because everybody would like to do it, but, you know, nobody actually is willing to make the sacrifices. And what that bank decided to do is that for your deposits, they would pay you a really crappy interest rate on them. And a lot of people just didn't care And they were willing to make that sacrifice because of the great hours. And so for the people who loved them, they're like, well, yeah, but I, you know, I get these great hours. So similarly for me, and in terms of our businesses, I like to think about, you know, what are you, it's not about what do you want to be great at, because everybody has these grandiose visions. It's what are you willing to be bad at? And so for me, when I think about that, one of these things, and it's kind of awful, honestly, but and I feel bad about it, but I'm actually pretty bad at returning emails. I mean, I will always do it. I will always return the email, but I'm slow. And part of the reason that I do it is that I batch the emails, and I don't, you know, if something's really urgent, I'll do it. But oftentimes, you know, for days, I won't really deal with my email, and then I'll do it kind of all at once. So it means that my response time is not that impressive, because I need blocks of time in order to be able to work on substantive projects. And so you can't be doing email all the time if you need 4 hours to be like doing the outline for your next book or something like that.
Yeah. So returning emails, do you like open emails, mark them unread, open emails, mark them unread? Do you ever play that game?
Yeah. I kind of have them sitting in my inbox, just sort of languishing until I do something with them. And I know it's all contrary to David Allen's really excellent wisdom about, you know, only open it once, only touch it once, like that kind of thing. But I'm trying to get better and more efficient about it. But mostly, in all honesty, what they do is they just kind of hang there.
Yeah, no, I have an inbox full of those too. But I mean, it's hard, right? I mean, and I think just the idea that you're actually know you will respond to it in time. It's just you can't get to it right now because you're doing sort of more, not more important than the person there, but you're doing the important work that you need to get done. And email can be done, I mean, on planes and while you're waiting for things, all kinds of stuff, right? So.
Yeah. And I mean, the truth is it's possible that some people might get offended because we have this, you know, this attitude that like, well, why didn't you respond in 5 minutes to my message? Or, you know, I mean, even probably more legitimately, why didn't you respond in a week to my message? But it's just like, oh my God, I'm sorry. I know it would have taken 3 minutes for me to do it, but, you know, there were things that needed to happen.
Exactly. Okay, Joy, let's move to projects. Projects is a very loose term, so this can be some new business way you want to go, a new book you want to publish, any sort of thing. You can take it how you wish, but I would love to know sort of what you do, the process you go through, whether it's a written process in your business or whether it's just an internal process, but how, when something does come through your inbox and you finally open it, or something comes to your head, you hear at a conference, but you have all these ideas of different projects. I want to know how you sort of filter through them and decide this project is worth my time, energy, and resources.
Yeah, that's a really great question, John. I like that. So the way that I think about it is that ultimately what's worked for me in the past couple of years is that every 6 months, I used to, you know, I've always been big on like New Year's resolutions, but I've decided more recently that I need to operate on kind of a 6 month schedule instead. And so for each 6 month period, I will pick 3 top priorities. And that's really it. That's really all that I can worry about. And I feel like if something doesn't fit into advancing those things in some way, then I really just can't deal with it during that period of time. So for instance, for the first half of 2015, my 3 goals were, number one, working on growing my email list. I wanted to double it by the end of the year. So that was kind of a goal for the whole year, but it was a focus for the first 6 months. And in fact, I was able to double the size within 6 months, which was great. My book, Standout, was released in April, and so I wanted to just max out on that. I wanted to do everything possible to make it a successful launch. So I had a lot of activities focused around the marketing of that, especially being on podcasts and doing guest posts and things like that. And then the third was that I wanted to find a girlfriend. So I figured that was a worthy goal to have on my list as well. So those were the 3 things that consumed my time for the first half of the year. Now I'm on to slightly different priorities. You know, the book has been launched. So a goal that I had for the second half of 2015 was that I wanted to sell the proposal for my next book. And fortunately, that has happened. So I'm now able to kind of be working on that. But, you know, getting the proposal done, the sales process takes a lot of energy. But so my third book is going to be coming out, I guess, you know, probably in a year and a half now or 2 years. It's going to be back with Harvard Business Review Press, which published my first book, Reinventing You. So I'm excited about that. something that I'm going to be focusing on, you know, starting now and through the beginning of 2016 is developing my own online course. So those are the types of things that I'm focused on, which are kind of big picture projects. They have a lot of steps, they have a lot of moving parts, but I feel like you can only really have three of those at any given time.
Oh man, I love that. That's great. So three, and I love how, so for the first half of 2015, you had one for growth where you literally wanted to double the size of your list. You had one for like promoting an existing part of your business rather than forgetting about it and moving on to the next project, which I think lots of us as entrepreneurs tend to do. We get all excited and then just like, okay, that's done. What's the next thing? And you forget about your book. And then you had a personal one, which is really awesome. Would you say that you kind of thematically, like to maybe keep yourself, I guess, sane and sort of whole and not just business focused all the time? Because I think, and I wonder if you agree, that your personal life has to, like, you have to be happy and healthy in order to do the good work, right? So it's kind of necessary. So I like how you had that growth, the focus on existing business, and then a personal to kind of keep you well-rounded. Is that sort of a theme you would stick to?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is useful to have that. And, you know, of course, there's sort of seasons of things and, you know, where you're going to be shifting your focus and where certain things will be more possible than at other times. I mean, I guess the three that I'm working on right now, you know, having now sold the book and sort of shifting from that, I guess the focus areas are, number one, over the next, you know, let's say 6 months is kind of too long of a horizon for this, but let's say the next 4 months, I am going to be in research and writing mode for the book. So now that we have the contract, I'm shifting over. So it's going to be interviewing people for it and starting to write a first draft. So that will be a big area of focus. It'll take a lot of time. It means that to a certain extent, I'll be a little bit more inward focused rather than, you know, over the past year promoting the book. I've done a lot of podcast appearances. I've been doing a lot of media stuff. Now this is the sort of cyclical period where I'm, you know, kind of regenerating, I guess, you know, getting new content, doing, you know, getting new material. So there's that. There is the creation of the course, which again is a little bit more of an internal kind of thing where you're sitting at home with your laptop, but you know, it needs to happen so that then you will actually have material to burst onto the scene with. And then a third one, again, you know, this is sort of like the cyclical regeneration, is that I kind of came to the conclusion, a sort of embarrassing conclusion, that I've spent the past few years, I mean, basically, like, if you're into entrepreneurship or marketing or any of these sort of related business disciplines, I think I'm like very up on it and super interesting. But I, to a certain extent, have lost my ability to talk to people that are not doing that. and so I feel like I might need to get more well-rounded again. So I've decided that a goal for myself is that over the course of the next year, so like 50-ish books, I want to read at least one book a week that does not relate to business or entrepreneurship, so that I will have a reservoir of new information and topics so that I can become the interesting person that I strive to be.
I love it. I love your self-awareness and knowing like your weaknesses and where you've sort of let like slide because you're focusing on other parts. And that's so essential. And I really do love it. I do want to ask you though, how do you determine the idea for your next book? Like, where does this come from?
For every book that I've written, it's just really what I'm interested in. For my first book, I mean, it kind of suggested itself because the way that it shook out was that once I was able to start writing for the Harvard Business Review, I wrote a piece in late 2010 called How to Reinvent Your Personal Brand. And that became a popular post. And they came to me and asked if I would expand it into an article for the Harvard Business Review magazine. And so I did that. And when I did, I sort of knew that I had hit on something because right after the article came out, three different literary agents approached me and said, "Hey, are you represented? Would you like to turn this into a book?" And I'm like, "Oh my God, okay, that's great. I didn't know it could be that easy." And of course, it wasn't easy until I had like somehow stumbled into the right thing.
Yeah.
But that was the first book. And then which came out in 2013 and was called Reinventing You. And the second book was called Standout. And that was just an area of personal interest for me. I considered it in a lot of ways a sequel to Reinventing You. Standout is basically about if you are a professional, if you're an entrepreneur, and you know, you like what you're doing, you like your field, you feel like, all right, this is the place I want to be. The question becomes, how do you get known for it? In a very noisy, very crowded world, how do you differentiate yourself and get people to recognize that you, in fact, are an expert? And so I wanted to try to crack that formula. So I wrote the book in order that I could do that. You know, how do you become a thought leader? How do you become a recognized expert in your field? And then this third book that I am now working on is the next question that I'm really interested in, which is some people have been able in really smart ways to take that expertise and monetize it. And, you know, they're not just famous. They also are very successful. Their businesses are really thriving. And I wanted to understand, especially now that people are making money in different ways because of the internet, I wanted to understand what some of those new ways are. What are those strategies? And so I am writing this book, this you know, to be titled book about how to monetize your ideas. And we'll be speaking with a variety of people who have been able to do it in interesting ways.
That's awesome. I love it. I love it.
Thanks.
All right, Dory, this has been a lot of fun. I've really, really enjoyed this. I want to wrap up on one final question. This idea I'm calling the entrepreneurial gap. So as entrepreneurs and as sort of dreamers, we're always sort of putting our success into the future, projecting it outwards 3 months, 6 months, a year, 5 years. When our book sells this many, when I get to stand on that stage, when I hit this revenue goal, I will then be successful. But what happens is right before we get to that goal, we always set five loftier ones into the future. And it's always when I get there where we live sometimes in this gap where we are never, ever successful no matter what we achieve. So I would love right now, Dory, if you could stop. You've been in this game now of entrepreneurship since about 2006. So 10 years, you've probably had some wins, some losses, some highs, some lows. And I know you've done really, really well for yourself. But I would love if you could stop right now, turn and look behind you at everything you've done, everything you've accomplished, and tell me how you feel about your career so far up till today.
Well, I think looking back on my career, I actually feel really good about the progress that I've made. I mean, I think like most entrepreneurs, I have the challenge of you know, as you say, basically moving the goalposts that you're never quite satisfied. You never quite feel like you've made it or you've done what you want to do. But overall, I mean, for the past decade, I feel very proud that I've been able to support myself. And there is something so incredibly empowering about the idea of knowing that you're not relying on anybody. You're sort of flinging yourself out into the universe and saying, all right, I'm going to make money through my own wits. And in fact, when you see your bottom line growing, you're able to track progress in this kind of gamified way where it's like, oh, I'm learning things. I'm getting better at this. I'm actually really making progress. And so when you hit milestones, I mean, this will be my best year financially ever. And, you know, you keep having, you know, having these markers that you're getting somewhere, you're learning things. That's a very satisfying place to be. It's about autonomy and progress and growth and all the things that the positive psychology specialists have shown really matters for humans and their happiness and their growth and development. So I think that entrepreneurship is kind of the perfect cauldron for that.
Awesome. Beautiful answer. I love it. And you should be proud of what you've accomplished up till now. So Dory, we've got to talk about your business in passing. Could you please take a moment to specifically tell the listener where to find out more about you and your business?
Absolutely, John. So the best place for folks who might be interested in, which is doryclark.com. And in fact, I will also mention that if people are interested, I wrote a free 42-page ebook. It's a workbook that was adapted from my book, Stand Out. And it's a series of questions, you know, made up as a workbook. So you can literally write your answers in it that leads you step by step through the process of how to develop your own breakthrough ideas and build a following around it. So I really developed it as something that I hope will be a useful tool for entrepreneurs. And if people would like to get a free copy of that, they can do it at doryclark.com, which is DoryClark.com.
Excellent. I will link to doryclark.com in the show notes. I'll find a link to Uncommon Service, the book, and also Reinventing You and Stand Out, the book. So Dory, once again, thank you so much for taking the time to join me today. And please just keep doing what you're doing because it is awesome and inspiring to watch.
Hey, thank you so much, John. Great speaking with you.
Dory, thank you so much for joining me. That was a lot of fun. I've read your work for the past, I'm going to say about a year and a half now. I read your posts on Entrepreneur in Inc., and I've read your book, and it really helped me sort of develop myself as I was creating Hack the Entrepreneur. So it was great to actually get to talk to you, and it was an excellent conversation. I love, you have such a personable way about you, and I really, really, really appreciate you taking the time. So that being said, the conversation also went really deep a couple times, and I have 6 places I had to go back through this conversation that was 32 minutes long, give or take. And I had to go back and look to see what exactly was said. And there was a couple things that you said that really, really stood out to me. But then as I went through it the third time, there was this one thing that you said, Dory. This one thing that Dory said that really, really stood out to me. And it was it. It was that one thing. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
For the past decade, I feel very proud that I've been able to support myself. And there is something so incredibly empowering about the idea of knowing that you're not relying on anybody. You're sort of flinging yourself out into the universe and saying, all right, I'm going to make money through my own wits. And in fact, when you see your bottom line growing, you're able to track progress in this kind of gamified way where it's like, oh, I'm learning things. I'm getting better at this. I'm actually really making progress.
And that's the hack. Dory. I love this. I so love this because you really hit on some important things. Well, first of all, congratulations on hitting your best year. But this is so important for you out there when you're listening, because sometimes we look at people that are ahead of us, right? And we think that we don't see sort of the connection between where we are and where they are. And so actually, my book, which you're going to go and hopefully purchase for $3 right after this, or buy the paperback version, but it's not about this. But at the beginning of the book, I do talk about, I use this analogy of learning to swim, because there's this misunderstanding about entrepreneurship that you like can fully sustain yourself and make the most money you've ever made, like Dory, and that it kind of just happened. But it didn't. She said this is a decade of working for herself, a decade of creating things out of nothing and sort of standing up like through her own wits, just the sheer just audacity of herself to do it. And it's awesome. At the beginning, I'm sure the first many, many years, it's really this idea of just learning how to swim. When you learn how to swim, what do? You tread water. And when you tread water, you're basically just learning to pay the bills. And then you're looking to just sort of replace the income you had from your good, steady job. But then it doesn't stop. It continues to get better and better and better and better. But it doesn't start off better. It doesn't start off that you make a ton of money. I think that's the wrong attitude to go at it. It really is this idea of learning to tread water. And so that's why this one really hits home, because I think that that is so key to figuring out this whole process. Dory has been at it for 10 years at this point. Like, that's a long time to be at something. And so from the outside, it looks like, wow, she's so successful. And she is. But she's put in 10 years of work. You put in 10 years of work to anything and you will be successful. So you have to decide now that if you wanted to put in 10 years of work into building up a personal brand, your own business, all these types of things, when you look back on 10 years, the 10 years is passing anyways, but you're going to look back and be like, wow, I'm glad that I finally, that podcast and John finally kicked me in the ass enough to start it, because the difference between you now and you then will be staggering if you put in that work. But it's not going to, there's no sudden thing that's going to just take you to that 10-year point. It really is a process of jumping in the water, not knowing how to swim, learning to tread water, and then start maybe swim your first lap. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're swimming in the Olympics and you're making a ton of money and your business is doing great. But it is that evolutionary sort of process. So thank you, Dory, for clarifying that. And just thank you for being so open with your answers with these questions. Thank you. All right. So if you want further evidence of learning to swim, htebook.com. Please go check it out. And I would love to hear from you. Yeah, try the book, read it, tell me what you think on Twitter, or email me, john@hacktheentrepreneur.com. I would love to hear from you what you think. I put a lot of work into it, and I really think you're going to dig it a lot. But yeah, that's it. Thank you so much for taking time today with me. I really, 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 truly, truly, truly do appreciate it. We are going to be heading into a holiday, sort of a holiday, I guess you could call a holiday. This is the first time I've done it. Since I've started the show back 2014, September, I haven't taken a break at all from shows, and I'm going to take a break starting later next week and through the holiday season, and then we're going to come back in the new year strong and ready to go. I have a whole bunch of really good interviews for you already recorded, but I just think it's time to take a break for all of us. And that's why it actually works really well, because I wrote a book and the book comes out today, and you can have the book to keep you company when I'm not there. But I also have 170 episodes you can go back and listen to again if you'd like, if you're lonely, or you could email me. I'm taking a holiday and I'm going to visit family and it's going to be fun, but I'm going to have my phone and my laptop. I always do. I don't go that far without that stuff. So I would still love to hear from you. It'd be fun, you know? All right. I won't waste any more of your time. Thank you so very much. htebook.com. If you would like to check out the book, I would appreciate it. Otherwise, until next time, please keep hacking the entrepreneur.